Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends. I'm so glad that you're here in my favorite part of the afternoon, spending time with you. I know time is your most precious commodity, so thank you for investing your time in finding hope for healthy relationships. And we can find that in the Word of God, in the hope that we have in Jesus Christ. And I've got a great show for you today. I have a confession that goes along with the show. Actually, I am going to talk to this guest on a very personal level because this is advice that I need for the stage I'm in life. But I'm just going to welcome you all to listen along because I know that I am not alone. Listen, I'm so thrilled to have Jim Burns back. He's the president of Homeward. He speaks to thousands of people around the world each year. He has more than 2 million resources in print in 20 languages. Isn't that amazing? And he primarily writes and speaks on the values of Homeward, which are strong marriages, confident parents, empowered kids, and healthy leaders. And he and his wife, Kathy, live in Southern California. They've got 3 grown daughters who are married. They have 4 grandkids. And what we're going to talk about today is his book. He has many, many books, but this book today is Finding Joy in the Empty Nest, Discover Purpose and Passion in the Next Phase of Life. And as my husband and I have that empty nest on the horizon there, I need all the advice I can get. So Jim, I'm so glad to have you back here. Thank you so much for joining us to talk about this really important season of life.
Well, Jessica, it's great. And I told somebody right before the show that on my podcast, you are my favorite. I just started a podcast and I went, Jessica, and these are like huge names. And I was like, no, Jessica was my favorite. My favorite show is with you. So there you go.
Well, you know, this is recorded and going out to the world and it is in record now. Like, I am going to hang on to that forever. That is a huge compliment. Thank you so much for that. I know, I really feel like we just have such a heartbeat that's in sync for this generation and for parents and families and marriages. And I am so, and you have lived this. You have lived finding joy in the empty nest. And there's a lot of people right now in this season, in the end of summer, who about to do the college drop-off thing. And it might be their first, the middle, the last. And Jim, you and I have talked about before, I don't think there's anything that can prepare a parent adequately for that moment. Like, it is rough. And you open this book talking about dropping off your youngest at college. So take us to that moment. Tell us about the transition that followed. And you have survived to tell the tale. So I feel like we need to give that disclaimer up front.
We have survived. It hasn't always been easy. But the interesting thing when you say that is, I think you have, why I love that we're having a conversation before your kids, before you become an official empty nester. Because as your kids are teens, you know, there's moments of empty nest, you know, little spaces where they're kind of all gone for the night or whatever. But, you know, you either prepare or you don't prepare. And I did all these focus groups. And the people who prepared just even a little bit, they've entered the empty nest a lot easier than the people who didn't prepare. Kathy and I were on the side that didn't prepare. Totally focused on our kids, solely focused on teens, solely focused on games and events and church activities and busy, busy, busy. And we dropped Heidi, our youngest, off at Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo. We live in Southern California. This is up in Central Coast. And we were driving back after a couple of days of Target runs and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And really, we were just busy. We didn't talk for like 45 minutes. And I look over at Kathy and there's a tear going down her cheek. And I said, you're okay, babe? And she goes, yeah, no, I'm fine. I go, do you want to stop in Santa Barbara, which we love Santa Barbara, it's on the coast, and get a lunch? And she goes, no, but let's just go home. And I knew that she was feeling it big time. And we came to a silent house. I mean, I honestly even missed like the towels on the floor that they would leave after, you know, they'd shower or whatever. That drove me nuts, right? And we had to reinvent our life. And for Kathy, she was the sun, and we had 3 planets revolving around, well, 4 really, including me in the house, you know, kind of revolving around the sun, and there were no planets revolving. And so she had to figure out what she was going to do. She says that she experienced what we call the empty nest syndrome, which is something I write about in that book. But, you know, I thought I was okay. And then I realized, oh, wait, I'm going to work an hour early. I'm staying an hour later. I just poured myself into other stuff. And so we were both a little bit probably depressed. And we had this awakening going, wait, we've even buried some stuff on our marriage. We buried some other issues, things that we needed to probably talk about. And now we had time and we had silence, and neither we were doing very well with. So it was a way big, like, you're kidding me. We just changed our life. And our kids are having a great time because they were in college. Our kids are kind of close together. So they were in college and they were just having a grand time. You know, they had a new life, and we were like, well, what are we going to do with our new life? And it was hard.
That is hard. And, you know, this is why I told my listeners, this is my own personal counseling session, Jim, here. And I'm so encouraged to hear you talk about the importance of preparing, because my husband and I, we recently had our 25th wedding anniversary. And really, we have 4 kids, so we're busy. We have not ever gone away from them for more than maybe 2 or 3 nights, like just haven't done it.
Yeah.
And we went on a 10-day cruise for our 25th anniversary. And I'll tell you, Jim, in the first 2 or 3 days, I had panic attacks thinking, what is this? Like, I don't even know how to act, how to behave when I'm not taking care of other things or that kind of thing. But after about 3 or 4 days, I remember looking at my husband across the table and saying, oh my gosh, I remember you. Oh, you're that guy I used to date. You're pretty fun. Hey, this is pretty good. And so we've recognized the importance of investing in that and preparing for it. Because like what you said, I mean, it's like a hole in the house, that silence there. But I love how you reframe it to say, no, you have a new life too. It's not just a hole in the house. It's a new house and it's a different house. And in this book, you outline 10 principles, which I've already highlighted all over the place, for surviving and thriving in this stage. So what do you hope that readers are going to take away from this book? How do you hope they'll be equipped and encouraged to prepare for that, for this stage of life, or to maybe make some transitions if they're already in it?
Well, you kind of answered it because you used the word hope twice in that, as you were opening. And that's what I would say. I want to give readers hope, because what I found was too many people had, this empty nest syndrome where they were, they were depressed, they were saddened. When I wrote this book, there's a couple who still don't even know this story. And so if they're listening to your show, they're going to now know. But she had just become an empty nest mom, and we had just spent time with them. They're on our board, and I love these people. And I put a picture of them kind of on the side by where I write, because I was kind of writing to her. Her daughter went to a place, I think you've heard of it, it's called Baylor.
And,
and her daughter, was moved to Baylor. So that, for us, Southern California to Baylor is a long way. And her son, their son was in Houston. So they were now just going to go empty nest, and she just crashed. I mean, and she's one of the finest Christian women I've ever known, but it was like, what am I going to do with my life? All my energy has been put in there. And so when I was thinking of her, because I wanted to give her hope, and you don't give hope by just going, it's going to be okay. You give hope by helping them learn to reinvent their life, to refocus on their marriage, to if they're single, to refocus on some other aspects of their life. And so, what I hope to do was much more than just go, okay, find joy by having a garden. Mine was much more, I want to give them hope, and I want to help them find a clear path to what really becomes sometimes, Jessica, longer than, you have 2 decades with your kids, and then you're kind of fired as a parent of day to day. You're still mom and dad, but you're the parent for day to day for 2 days. You're going to be longer in the empty nest for some. For Kathy and I, we had the boomerang 8 times with our kids because of grad school and all this stuff. So we'd get it and we'd get those moments that you and your husband had where we go, wow, this is great. We're connecting. And then next, mom, can I come back? I'm going to go to grad school down, blah, blah. But the point being, hope and a clear path. And so way before I wrote that book, that's exactly what I wanted. And I wrote the words, helping them have hope and a clear path toward their what could be their greatest season of life, because they're not losing their kids. They just have to reinvent the relationship with their, with their what we'd call their adult children.
Well, let's dive into principle one, because this was so encouraging to me, because you say when your child leaves home and their life is filling up with fresh experiences, follow their lead. And I think there's a lot of people who are just frozen and trying to hang on to the way that things used to be. Like, oh, it's almost like a death almost. I mean, I know obviously it's not even that, that's not even close. And I don't mean that tritely, but really, like, don't leave their room the same, you know, don't touch anything, like let it be like that.
Right.
And you say that a fresh start requires four things: closing the ending chapter, choosing to change your attitude, setting new goals, and investing in your friendships. Why is this so hard to do? And what practical advice do you have for parents who are just frozen and can't start?
Yeah. Well, and what I say to parents is, you know, it's okay to, you know, be paralyzed for a very short time, but then you do have to, you're not losing this, you know, like you say, death. It is. For me, it was like, what the heck? We had been at football games for 9 years because my kids were cheerleaders and all that. And that, it was so silent. And I said to Kathy, should we go to a game? Because that's what we always did on Friday nights. Uh-huh. Well, actually, there's other things you can do on Friday nights, you know, not go to those games. So we had to literally, and I love those four things. I'd kind of forgotten about them, to be honest. You know, the closing, the ending chapter, choosing to change your attitude, set new goals, and investing in friendships. We actually had to be proactive about that. For us, we took a 10-day vacation driving up the coast in California, and we actually had a yellow notepad. We didn't have our iPads out. We had a yellow notepad, and we talked about what we wanted to do. And those points kind of came out of that. So the fresh experiences. When I started interviewing people who were finding joy in the empty nest, these are all people who had some fresh experiences. One woman, prior to the kids leaving, decided that when the kids left, she would have more time. And so she went back, got her master's, and is one of the finest counselors here in Orange County where I live. And she's just a great counselor, and she does it from a different – so she has a marriage and family counseling degree. My goodness, she went to school for, you know, 2 years, and then she had to do 3,000 hours and – you know, she reinvented her work side. Other people say, you know what, I've been wanting to go to that Bible study, and now I'm going to go to that Bible study on Tuesday nights because I have the time. I want to go work out. Many men say, you know what, I've kind of not spent as much time on the workout stuff. I want to go work out. So they're going to work out, but, you know, some of the basic things. But all of the people who I felt did well were people who said, we're not going to just take all the extra time that we have now and just, it'll fill with whatever. We're going to actually be proactive about choosing what we're going to do. And the ones who do that, I think they actually find more joy. And, you know, if they didn't do date nights before because they were too busy, they start doing date nights. If they didn't do, you know, the morning devotional, they do the morning devotional. You know, whatever it is, they take the time to be proactive. But if somebody, I said this in the book, a successful life is never accidental. So if you're going to have successful in the empty nest, you're going to have to put some of that energy that you would for work or for other things onto that, the new part of your life.
And that's not just about you. That's not doing things for you. That is doing things for your kids. And I remember when one of my daughters went to college, she told me that some of her peers were having a really hard time because they knew their moms were so sad. And that was a burden. Yeah. You know, that was really something they carried around and they felt guilty about. Mm-hmm. And so, I remember her talking about that and thinking that it was encouraging to my daughter. You know, for me, it's about work and my mission and, you know, writing and speaking and things like that. For different moms, that's going to look way different in different ways. But that is what we're going to have to do. But when we come back from this break, Jim, I want to talk about principle two. I wish we could talk about every one, but I'm just giving some starters here. And that's about reinventing the relationship with your adult children. You talked about this a little bit before, but keeping responsible adulthood in mind as your goal, and that remembering that experience is a better teacher than advice. That's really hard. And your quote in your book is, it's really not about you anymore. As he makes the shift to adulthood, he won't need to see you as much as you want to see him. That is a harsh but very necessary reality check. We'll call it tough love. So when we come back, I want to talk about the five big questions that you have in this chapter. We're talking to Jim Burns, author of Finding Joy in the Empty Nest, Discover Purpose and Passion in the Next Phase of Life. And we'll see you in the next phase of this show after the break. A recent study reports that the rapidly declining global birth rate will lead to a major population crisis if birth rates continue to decline. Their massive support for Planned Parenthood is all part of their plan. While we may feel hopeless in the constant attack on life, there is an amazing way to fight back. When they shout abortion, we shout life. Preborn is leading the way. Every day, their network rescues 200 babies. You see, when a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears the heartbeat, a baby's chance at life doubles. The ultrasound is the secret weapon that joins a mother's heart to her child. Preborn provides ultrasounds for clinics in the highest abortion areas. Can we join hands nationwide for life? One ultrasound is just $28, but any gift will help. $5,000 underwrites ultrasounds for the entire network for a day. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250, baby, or visit preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. Welcome back, friends, and aren't you grateful for that truth that God's mercies are new every single morning, because that is how often we need them, and in some life phases more than others. Today, we're talking about the life phase of finding joy in the empty nest, talking to Jim Burns on how to discover purpose and passion in the next phase of life. I have shared with you, I am entering this phase myself. And before the break, we were just talking about how you get started, how you recover from that brutal college drop-off, or whether they're going out, moving out, taking a job, doing whatever it is, your life is changing. So we're talking about principle 2, reinventing the relationship with your adult children, because it's going to change. You just have some choice about your attitude about that. You don't have the choice of if it's going to change or not. You only have the choice of your attitude. So, Jim, I want to go to these 5 big questions that you have in this particular chapter. Let me give them to my listeners real quick. Have you given your child the passport to adulthood? Are you enabling dependency? Do you want it more than they want it? Are you communicating with them on an adult level? And are you ready for the boomerang? You've already talked about that. These are great questions, but I really want to focus on that enabling dependency, because we hear so much about that in millennials, Gen Z. Where is the line between supporting and enabling? And what should parents do about it?
Well, I think, first of all, I think, Jessica, that most parents really have their motives right. They want to help their kids. They want them to thrive. What we sometimes forget is if we enable our kids to be too dependent on us as adults, then, well, what's going to happen is they're going to become entitled, and we have a lot of young adult kids who are kind of entitled, and there's going to be a failure to launch. So that's the tension is, there's no easy answer to this. But, you know, for Kathy and I, we've always had to ask, is this a help or is this enabling them? Take, for example, money. You know, 76% of parents help their adult children with something, with money. But if you go overboard and you help, if you had the money and you help buy them the dream house that they can't afford, then you're really enabling dependency, and that's not going to help. They can live in an apartment. They can live, you know, without, you know, all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's the question. You know, and if they're living in the home, it's even more so, where sometimes we look at, let your adult child make their own bed. I mean, is this the battle you want to fight? You know, well, I tell a story in my book on adult children about a kid who, you know, his mom, he was vegan, and his mom cooked a vegan meal for him and then cooked a regular meal for them. And I thought, you know what, he needs to learn. He's an adult. He doesn't have a job. He's just, you know, living off of mom and dad. He should probably learn how to cook himself. And that's hard. I mean, it's hard because you want to serve and you want to care, but they will never become a responsible adult if we enable dependency. And sometimes our community or our spouse or somebody else is going to have to tell us that we're enabling dependency, because sometimes we don't simply know. You know, and so Kathy and I kind of do a check and balance with each other. Are we enabling dependency on this one? Now, with us, we just, this last weekend, and we lavished our adult daughter and her husband and the two grandkids with all kinds of stuff, meals, fun, whatever. That's awesome. That's great that we could do that. If we were enabling dependency where we go, they absolutely now need us because we have some kind of a deal where we've not given them the passport to adulthood and we're still expecting, you know, something in return. That's not good because the bottom line is responsible adulthood. You don't do that when you're doing things that are enabling dependency.
It's so true. And sometimes I think that's really about us. We're enabling the dependency because we don't want to give up that identity or that connection.
Sure.
You know, Jim, if you feel like your relationship connection is that fragile, that if you stop making a vegan meal or stop making their bed, that you're going to impact your relationship or no longer be needed. That is a reality check. And what I hear from a lot of couples is that this is a point of conflict for many couples who are arguing about how much money should we give? Should we let them live here or not?
Right.
You know, should we go and, you know, pick them up and rescue them from whatever it is? That is really hard. And that goes to what you have in principles 4 and 5, reinvesting and rekindling the romance in your marriage. And I do hear from a lot of couples, and it scares me to death. Like, as somebody who's approaching empty nester, and that's one of the reasons why my husband and I talked about going on the cruise that we did, because they say in the absence, in the stillness that you described, they find themselves living with a stranger. So why is it so important to date, to court, to romance, to prioritize your spouse? And you and your wife, Kathy, just celebrated 50 years of marriage. 50, Jim. We were talking about what an accomplishment that is and what an encouragement is for everyone else. So you have some street cred there. So what? Tell us about reinvesting that effort in your marriage.
We do have street cred, but we speak a lot on marriage, and we always say we have a high-maintenance marriage. So we had to, I always say falling in love is easy. Staying in love takes a lot of energy, commitment, and focus. So what do people do naturally? And even in the teenage years, we do this. Sometimes some people say that that's the hardest years of marriage. People are the kids are busy, you're busy. It's an interesting stage right before you go into the empty nest. And so you wake up and you've buried some marriage issues under the mat. Well, you got to pull those things out, but you also, you know, really do. I think this is the chance to set, if you didn't, like I said, if you didn't do date nights, you start doing date nights. You can re-fall in love. I mean, and you can stay in love. I mean, there are moments where the love that Kathy and I had when we were dating in college and got married 1 week after she graduated, which we always now kind of think is crazy, but we're glad we did it now. But, with that, we say we can do that. We needed to spend time together. We needed to connect. You connect not with sitting at the kitchen table having an argument about finances, which you got to do sometimes, but you connect when you have fun together, when you play together, when you enjoy each other's company. And for a lot of people, they say, wow, we haven't been on that trip that you guys took. And you don't have to do a cruise. If the people don't have the money to do a cruise, so go camping for the weekend. I don't care what it is. But do whatever it takes to re-engage. And that's, I think, how you win in the second half. That's because there was a love factor. We let it, you know, I always say, untended fires soon become nothing but a pile of ashes. Well, stir up those ashes and they become a spark again. And it's not, I started to say it's not rocket science, but then you have a husband who's a rocket scientist. That's funny. It just came out. Uh-huh. But it's not rocket science. You literally do the thing. We know what to do. How to reboot our marriage. It's put energy and time into it. And also, I tell a lot of people, this is a great time for a marriage checkup. I mean, the Bible says where there's no counseling, the people fall in the multitude of counselor. There's safety. How cool to get a counselor or a coach, pastor, somebody who knows something about marriage and let them guide you into, well, what is the second half going to look like? Because it's going to look different. And, you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, there you have issues. So work through some of the issues. Kathy and I had to do that. We didn't even realize we had some of those issues because we have a, you know, good marriage. But we went, whoa, we've got some habits here that have caused us to fade a little bit. So let's work on those habits. And we ended up reading 3 marriage books, boom, right off the bat. And to kind of just, that helped us rekindle. So our mentors were paper mentors. And like for example, when I read your book on teens, I mm-hmm. went, okay, I'm going to hand this book out to everybody, because you become they may not hear you speak, or they may not know you personally, but you're mentoring them through books. And so for us, although we didn't go get counseling, and maybe we should have, we found these books to be really, really helpful because it got us on the same page on a couple of things.
Well, you know, that reminds me of a verse from Song of Solomon in chapter 2, verse 15, that says, "Catch for us the foxes, the little foxes that ruin the vineyards, our vineyards that are in bloom." Mm. And what you're describing, I think about that as the little foxes, you know, that are running around. And you're right. I mean, parents who are in that toddler phase, they think, oh, it's so exhausting, it's so busy, it's so difficult. And I don't want to tell them, Jim, oh, just wait until the teenage years, because they don't go to bed at 8 o'clock anymore. That's the problem, you know. So my husband and I, we tell ourselves that we're two ships passing in the night a lot of times, because he's a morning person, so he'll do all the morning early sports practices. I'm a late night person, so I'm waiting for them to come home, but he's already gone to bed because he's got to get up at 5, you know, to take the other one. It is really hard to do. But you know what I'll tell you, Jim, again, this is not just for us as our marriage and our couples, it benefits our kids. So just not too long ago, even this summer, all four of my kids are home, and my husband and I have not seen each other. We have not had time to connect or anything. And they said, "We want you to go on a date. We've planned our own night. Like, we are taken care of. You don't have to worry about us." What they did actually was they made their own progressive dinner, where they pulled together their coupons and the free benefits from their apps, and they went around and collected all that food, and then went and ate with their cousins. And they're like, "No, we want you to go, because when we are happy, they are more secure." And it doesn't matter if they're home or if they're not home. That's so true. And one of the things I loved in your book is that you said that marriage has a soul. Tell us what you mean by that. I loved this thought.
Well, you know, when I say, I mean, it's a metaphor, if you would. But, you know, our soul is connected to every aspect of our life. So it's integrated into the outer part of our life, the inner part of our life. And I'm not sure, just our own personal soul, we probably pay enough attention to, you know, soul keeping. And, you know, it's for another time in terms of taking care of our own soul so that we can thrive. However, I believe that marriages also have kind of a soul, because there's a part of our life, our marriage, that is integrated in the outer side of our life. And then you said it really well. If our marriage is going better, then you know what? Our kids are going to feel secure. In fact, the Bible also says the man or woman of integrity walks securely. I'm convinced that if we walk with integrity in our own relationship, the soul of our marriage, then our kids are going to feel more secure. And so again, the soul of a marriage to me is what keeps it going, what builds intimacy. Take, for example, Kathy and I realized, as we were looking at the soul of our marriage, that spiritual intimacy was the least developed area of intimacy. Now, hey, I'm in ministry. Kathy's in ministry. She's got a Bible study. She's taught for, 15, 16 years. It's good for us to have spiritual intimacy, even with some of the people that we are ministering to, right? Mm-hmm. But for us, we had to say, no, we need to come back to that aspect of our life, because for us, it was the least developed area of intimacy. So in doing that, we had to proactively. So for us, I mean, this sounds maybe spiritually wimpy, but for us, we said, let's spend 20 minutes a week, you know, reading some scripture, reading something inspirational, talking about it, praying. And sometimes it goes over 20 minutes, and sometimes I don't remember what the scripture was that we read 10 minutes before, right? But what we found was that was helping us like crazy. We made a commitment to pray together daily. Now, again, the prayer might be 30 seconds, but even if we were like going in the night, we would just hold hands. We'd do it. We just would hold hands, easier now in the empty nest, but we'd hold hands, pray, and move on. Okay. But that's an important part, because you're now is that working on your own soul? Sure. But it's also working on the togetherness and the compatibility and the intimacy. And so I say you do whatever it takes to build on your marriage soul. And, you know, the soul, I mean, how do you describe a soul? I mean, it's your mind. Mm-hmm. In the Hebrews, it was your mind. It was connected to your mind, your heart, your very being. Your body was all soul, okay? Well, that's a part of a marriage. It's the entire aspect of a marriage. And if your marriage soul is good, then guess what? Not only is the spiritual intimacy better, but also the physical intimacy is better. Mm-hmm. My friends, who named Gary and Barbara Osberg, who they wrote a book, much sexier book than the titles of my titles, Five Sex Needs of Men and Women. Fourth sex need of a woman is spiritual intimacy. It's not even on the top 10 list for men. But my wife always says, when we have spiritual intimacy, she says, I'm much more drawn to Jim physically. Well, that's a cool thing. You know, and we need to understand that it's all blended together. So it's not like you go, okay, you know, and we men are really good at this. We'll do this compartment and then we kind of put that back, shove that back on the shelf and then pull out the next thing and kind of work on it that way. No, it meshes together. It's much more like spaghetti with, you know, meatballs and sauce. It just kind of all blends in there. So we have to be aware of that. And I really do think for us, that metaphor has been a really helpful metaphor, especially in the empty nest, that we want to put more time and energy into that. Because again, life gets busy. You know, when I was at Princeton in grad school and I left, I graduated and then I left and a friend of mine wrote me because I didn't go to the graduation. And he said, "Dear Jim, we missed you at graduation. If the devil can't make you bad, he'll make you busy." I find that in the busyness of life, I had no idea that it would not only affect my own personal soul, but it affected my relationship with Kathy. And you know, I have to say the phrase a lot of times, am I only giving Kathy my emotional scraps? I find that when I'm in that place, that our marriage soul needs some work.
And to do that and to get there, you really have to be intentional about it. You have to have purpose and priority, which is what your next principles are about. Principles 6 and 7 are about purpose and priorities. Yeah. So it's about prioritizing your marriage and thinking about what purpose there is. And you know, Jim, one of my favorite movies is Father of the Bride. I love the old one with Spencer Tracy, but I love the new one with Steve Martin. And you know, he has a midlife crisis, right? In Father of the Bride. And I think that's a fear that a lot of people have, you know, a lot of couples have, like, oh my gosh, is this where you're going to have your midlife crisis and try to dye your hair and have an expensive car and, you know, even like lose interest in me? When we come back from this break, I want to talk about how do we age with grace and avoid a midlife crisis that we often see portrayed in movies and in real life by investing in our purpose and priorities. And I also know that you have a special message for single parents, and I'd like to ask you about that too on the other side of this break. Listen, friends, we're talking to Jim Burns, and he is the author of Finding Joy in the Empty Nest, Discover Purpose and Passion in the Next Phase of Life. You're either there, you're going to be there, or you know someone who is there. So be sure and reach out and recommend this resource because we need to have purpose as we enter this phase of life. We'll talk more about that when we come back. I'll see you on the other side of this break.
The American Family Association, informing, equipping, and activating to transform American culture.
After the resurrection, when Jesus was given all authority in heaven and on earth, he commissions his disciples to make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything Jesus commanded them.
We at the American Family Association seek to aid the church in our great commission.
When you hear this,
this is American Family News.
You know what follows is the truth. Your news from a Christian perspective.
Hundreds of teachers are going to have to walk into that school building and they are forced to swallow political ideology that in many cases violates their very faith and conscience.
If you miss it at the top of the hour, American Family News podcasts are available at afn.net. And sign up for our daily news brief at afn.net. I'm looking for a reason, roaming through the night to find my place in this world, my place in this world. Not a lot to lean on, I need your light to help me find my place in this world, my place in this world.
Welcome back, friends. That is Place in This World, and if you grew up in the 90s, were alive in the 90s, you probably think That song sounds vaguely familiar. Well, yes, it was by Michael W. Smith. It is a remake, a cover by King and Country from the movie Unsung Hero, which I'll just take a break to put a plug in for. That movie is available for streaming now. We did interview the director here on the show, Richard Ramsey. You can catch that episode. Fun fact, Richie and I were in high school Sunday school together. We never thought, oh, you be a film producer and I'll be a radio host and we'll just see each other in 30 years. We did not see that coming, but great movie, great song, and great message, because we're talking about the emptiness season of life, and that is where a lot of people are asking that very question. What is my place in this world? Now that it seems like I've worked myself out of a job in parenting, which is what we all should do, where should we be? We're talking to one of my very favorite guests, Jim Burns. Always just so much appreciate the wisdom that you share, Jim. We're talking about your book, Finding Joy in the Emptiness, Discover Purpose and Passion in the Next Phase of Life. And before the break, we were talking about purpose and priority. So how can that be transformational for people who are facing this emptiness season?
Well, and by the way, that's a really cool story about you and what'd you call him, Richie?
Richie, yeah. Isn't that fun?
How incredible. I think that's wonderful. Well, I think it's a key question. And I find, Jessica, that a lot of people in the empty nest, they just keep on keeping on. And yet their job, their life has changed dramatically. It takes time. You know, so you have all this time with your kids in the teenage years, sometimes depending on the age, you know, you're driving them places, you're doing things, like you say, they go to bed later, you know, on and on. And then once you wake up and they're gone and it's quiet and they're gone, this is the time we can put more energy into purpose. I even say you can develop your relationship with God in a deeper way. You have more time. So use the time to be beneficial. But, you know, when it comes to priorities, you either just go with whatever's on the calendar. Like today, I looked on the calendar. I actually smiled when I saw that we were going to be having a conversation. But, you know, I'm going from meeting to meeting to meeting all day. And today's my meeting day. And so I looked at it. And, you know, my schedule I'm not in control today. The schedule is in control. So what we have to do is schedule our priorities. So if our life is not if we're not having meaning and we're not working on the priorities, that's because we didn't schedule them. And I know that sounds so unromantic when it comes to marriage, or so, mm-hmm. you know, unspontaneous when it comes to finding our priorities and purpose, but I think we schedule it in. So first we have to kind of refigure where we're going. And I said a phrase at the beginning of our conversation, significance in a well-lived life is never accidental. Well, if you want significance in your life, then it's not going to be accidental. It's just not going to happen. We have to make it happen. Happiness is a choice. So that's where you go. You make it happen. And a lot of the same people who are struggling in the empty nest, they've done a great job with their work or with other aspects of their life. Well, now apply that to, you know, their own, you know, meaning in life, because this really is about meaning. And the people who age well, the people who, you know, work through those empty nest years with purpose, are people who are intentional about it. And by the way, the latest finding, and you can Google me on this, is that the average person goes into their empty nest at 48.9 years old. They're not old. They're going to spend more time in the empty nest than, you know, raising their kids a lot of times. So, you know
what's so funny?
Reinvent their life after that.
Well, Jim, I am exactly that perfectly average. So that is right about describing me. So thank you so much for calling me not old, because, you know, when you have teenagers, you're ancient, right? Like born in the era before the internet. Oh my gosh, the horror. I can't even imagine. But, you know, I say you can say whatever you want about your priorities. If somebody asks you, what are your priorities? And you say, oh, my marriage, my family, my kids. Open your calendar and open your credit card statement, and those will tell you the true tale, whether it's golf or video games or whatever it is that you're investing in. Your calendar, just like you talked about today, you're looking at your schedule, what you have today, you're investing in families through Homeward. And by the way, our listeners can go to homeward.com and get such fabulous resources, like just incredible resources. And you have that. And then what you're spending your money on. You know, you just shared with me, you and your wife took an anniversary trip together. That may be something that you really have to save and sacrifice for. Or may just be camping. Right. That may be what you save and sacrifice for. But it may be something else, you know, and mentoring other kids or whatever that is that God is calling you to do in this season. But I do want to ask you about single parents, because we've talked a lot about marriage, but there are a lot of parents who are single. And I think that this must be even more terrifying. I mean, we're terrified of, okay, did I marry a stranger? The house is going to be even more quiet and maybe even more lonely.
Yes.
What words of encouragement do you have for them?
Well, when we think of the word empty nest, a lot of times we think about only marriage, but it's not true. You know, we have millions of singles who are also living in an empty nest. And I think single parents predominantly do a really good job. They just don't know they're doing a good job because they're so busy and they're multitasking. And so I want to give a shout out to anybody who's a single parent. But they've experienced two losses. You know, they were married, and so now they're not. So that's either a death or a divorce or whatever it might be. So sometimes right at the empty nest, that comes back at them. Maybe they were too busy to really even deal with some of that pain. And so you have that loss. Then you have the loss of your kids. And, you know, like with Kathy and I, we could at least commiserate together. You know, we used to say, we were quoting, who was it? City Slickers, where what do you do when you're old and you mumble at the mall and you talk about why don't the kids call? Why don't the kids call? I found myself saying that. Where are those kids? Why aren't they calling? You know, whatever. Or at least one in particular. I have three daughters and one didn't call. And I'm not bitter, but, you know, there you go. Probably closest to her now, but she just didn't call. She was too busy having fun. But again, what I find with these, with people who are in the single world is the ones who do well are the ones who step out, develop a relational, what I call, you know, a relational happiness around them, friendships, support system. I call it replenishing relationships. And what I found was they did that, and they also got involved in something beyond just, you know, going to work and, you know, coming home. They got involved in serving somehow. I mean, I know a woman who actually had been a candy striper when she was younger. Were you a candy striper ever? Because you were the nurse thing. Did you ever
do that? You know, they didn't call it that, but yes, essentially I was.
Okay. So she was a candy striper, and then she went, you know, those were some of my happiest days. So she actually went back and volunteered at a hospital.
Oh, I love it.
And she goes, she was single, a single gal. And she goes, you know what? I said I would do it, you know, once every 2 weeks. And she goes, oh yeah. So now I'm here 4 nights a week for 4 hours or something. And she goes, you know what? I wouldn't change it for anything. Well, she found, you know, that, you know, joy back from being a kid. So, and she was too busy to do it. My goodness. Okay. So now she took some of the time with the kids. The other thing with single parents is I found the ones that really did well were the ones who made sure that they had plans with their adult children. Like one woman in New Jersey, her daughter was in New York at school, and she planned every 4 weeks or 6 weeks, I can't remember, where they would do kind of what she called retail therapy, and, you know, they'd go get their favorite pizza or whatever. And so it was a drive for her, but she said, you know, that was a joy. I would just, because I was doing retail therapy and the pizza thing, my daughter totally wanted to be with me. And so, you know, she was doing that, but you can't overestimate that, the power of friendships and the power of some of that newness. Not easy a lot of times. And what I say to them is, please don't rebound. You know, now that your kid's gone, so there was this guy at work, and it's really not appropriate, or whatever. And jump into that. You're not going to find joy in that one.
Well, and you do advise, whether you're married or whether you're single, and a really important thing in this phase of life is to reinvest in friendship. So, why is this important? What does that look like?
Well, you know, sometimes we just didn't. You know, our kids, some of our friendships were based around our kids' activities. And, you know, now we're not at the activities. And so we kind of strayed from some of those kind of friendships. So, you know, I think a lot of people have to reinvest. One woman said, I had no idea that my best friends would happen after 50. And so, you know, you can have more time. I've been in a small group for 22 years with these men. We just went fly fishing. We do it once a year. But, you know, it's a group that every Tuesday morning we hang out. So, I mean, I have other friends, but these people I'm in touch with every week. And, you know, it's not that we just, you know, it's a Christian group. There's five of us. We don't, you know, we do the Bible and whatnot, but we also talk about, you know, sports and politics and tell jokes and do all that kind of stuff. And so they really, I'm a better husband and a better father. I'm a better Christ follower because I'm with, you know, Randy and Rod and Tom. You know, that's just what you do, right? So I did that right about in that stage when we became an empty nest. And, man, they've helped me. They're all these guys are a little older than me, and so they help me in terms of how to be a grandparent. They help me how to, you know, get my kids through the teen years, you know, all these kind of things. And that's just, it's been great. I mean, I honestly, my wife sometimes goes, you haven't been with those guys for 2 weeks. Well, we took a 2-week break off. I think she's saying in the back of her head, well, you need to go spend some time with those guys because they uplift you. But, you know, that's what you
right.
do. You find friendships.
Exactly. And then because a lot of times in this empty nest phase, you retire. And so you're losing, you know, your corporate identity. And I know I know some couples like that who will say, OK, yeah, you could use some time with friends, like that would be really good. And that would be good for us.
Right.
But,
right.
you know, Jim, you also have a really special message for what you call the grooviest grandparents in town, which I just love. Why are grandchildren a great opportunity to reinvest what you learned as a parent and do things even better? And you know, Jim, I have to say here, it's so funny because you said you wrote this book because you weren't prepared. I wrote the book that you referenced, Behind Closed Doors, because I was not a great mom and I'm sharing what I learned. So the Lord has seen fit to learn from our experiences,
yeah.
learn from our failures.
Sure.
But
sure.
what do you, yeah. what is that the grandparenting thing? Give me something to look forward to there.
Yeah. Well, when we were doing these, people cried. Most of our, we had focus groups. It was during COVID, so it was mainly online, hundreds of people. In every focus group we had, people cried. Soon as I started talking about grandkids, their faces lit up. It was
Aww.
The joy. And I'm telling you, you know, Kathy and I find such joy because, you know, we're interested in legacy now. And so by us being with our kids and, you know, somebody once said, you know, I had my grandkids over all weekend and they think I'm the oldest guy alive. And now that they've left, I think they are because you're exhausted. But like even spiritual intimacy, Jessica, like James, my grandson who's 8, I've read through the children's Bible with him 3 times. I didn't do that with my own kids.
Wow.
So, you know, we sit on the couch, he pulls out this action Bible thing and we read. And he likes, you know, he likes that. And he asks me fun questions and, you know, it's incredible. So it gives us the chance to do that. I said to James this weekend, actually, he was over at our house. And I said to James, hey, James, my name's to him, Papa J. We need a Papa J and James date. He goes, that'd be good. I want to go to Michael's, and I'm like, Michael's? I want to go to Michael's because they have Lego sets on sale. And I'm like, who even knows that? He's 8. And come to find out, yeah, Christy, my daughter, goes, oh, yeah, you go, you'll buy any Lego set where we won't buy those expensive Lego sets. So, like, he wants to go with you. So it's all about grandpa's going to buy the Lego set. But, you know, I want a relationship with my grandchildren that goes beyond, you know, giving them underwear and, you know, sweat socks for Christmas. You know, I can lavish love and I can also lavish generosity. And if there's not money in the house, then it doesn't have to be that. But I can lavish the generosity of going to Michael's. I have to find out where it is because I don't even know where that is. But it's some place that has Lego sets. And I think another stuff, like,
you know, he's 8, though.
I'm
sure he could pull up Apple Maps, like, before you, I bet, Jim.
Seriously. No, seriously. Like, Kathy was having trouble with her phone. I said, well, just ask James. He'll probably know. She goes, he doesn't have a phone. I go, oh, no.
It doesn't matter.
Right, right. So the grandchild thing is the legacy part of it is amazing. Mm-hmm. And what I say to grandparents is be like my grandma, be the party time grandma. So I want to be the party time grandpa. I want when they come in to have their eyes light up because I just stop what I'm doing because I have more time. So I stop what I'm doing and I just I zero in on them. And, you know, it's the joy of my life. Honestly, we need another show to talk about my grandkids because I'm like obnoxious about it. I'll just tell you. I can show you
pictures.
Next time we're together, I'll show you photos.
I would love that. And we've just said that right here. It's recorded. Everybody can hear it. We will book you again to talk specifically about grandkids, because that was so instrumental for me, is my grandmother's influence. And, yeah, you know, I would walk into her house and yes, she would give me as much Dr. Pepper as I wanted and as many moon pies as I wanted. But really what I feasted on was her undivided attention. She had time, you know, whereas parents, a lot of times they're dealing with all the logistics that have to be done to take care of kids. But anyway, okay, well, we are out of time. So we're just going to say this isn't over, just until to be continued right here. We are talking to Jim Burns, author of Finding Joy in the Empty Nest, Discover Purpose and Passion in the Next Phase of Life. Go to homeward.com, find all kinds of great resources, and may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you. And I'll see you right here next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.